Hello and welcome back to Learn It From a Layman.
I'm Carl Christensen here with Matt, Cameron, and Tim somehow again. We are going to this week be discussing a few of our world's problems because we are here as problem solvers extraordinaire, and we have selected very judiciously three important current topics. So we have, how do we reduce greenhouse gas emissions? How do we deal with the national debt? And how do we combat the Twitter mob? So we'll be taking those one at a time and discussing them thoroughly, and we'll each propose our solutions and then be voted down or destroyed.
Well, everybody on the internet knows that the best way to discuss the world's problems is for uninformed non-experts that don't really have any idea of the complexities of these issues to debate them in social media platforms like this or Facebook or as a Twitter mob.
Exactly. So, right. Yeah. These all, you know, we have clearly the best forum and the best people to solve these problems, like we've Matt said. So
because I think at the end of this podcast,
we have quite the broad perspective on everything, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and get started. How do we reduce greenhouse gas emissions? I'll start with Matt. Give it a whirl.
Well, okay. So greenhouse gas emissions, as we all know, greenhouse gas emissions come from every kind of useful product that mankind has ever invented or thought about or wanted to use, with the exception of the paper straw. The caveat being that paper straws are not useful.
Somebody invented a paper straw.
Wait, you live in California. Where have you been?
You can now have a felony if you don't have a paper straw in California. Come on, Carl. Keep up with this.
Anyway, back to greenhouse gas emissions.
Yes.
So there are a couple ways that we could do this. We could, one, eschew technology and go back to an Arcadian society, basically the Amish. Nice. Or we could stop worrying about it. That might have some negative long-term consequences. So that's one solution, is simply do nothing and just deal. Or we could take some actual steps to embrace technologies that don't require the same types of chemical reactions and irreversible processes. One of the reasons that we worry about greenhouse gas emissions is its effect on the ozone layer and all of that stuff. Well, the ozone layer is actually kind of sort of important, because it and the rest of the upper atmosphere, the ionosphere, the troposphere, and so forth. I know I'm delving
Wait
out of layman.
Wait, this doesn't sound layman to me.
I know it's not. I'm sorry. I studied space weather. All of that stuff actually helps shield the Earth from a lot of nasty radiation. Basically, space is a giant cosmic microwave, and without that stuff, we'd be constantly bombarded by high-energy particles, rays, and everything else that can cause cancer and sadness to life on Earth. Greenhouse gas emissions are a thing that, if they are truly contributing to the degradation of the ozone layer, yeah, that's something we want to deal with. One of the greatest things that we could reasonably do is, one, stop smoking. Stop smoking. You know how much smoke gets chucked out into the atmosphere from those cigarettes?
Well, you just lost us a couple sponsors.
I might have. Wait, what?
This podcast brought to you by Philip Morris.
If we lose Philip Morris as a sponsor, then I will feel slightly better about myself. The weird thing about this is that unless Carl and Tim and possibly our Uncle Dale do some interesting translating, this is not going to reach the audience that would make the most difference by dropping smoking, which is Southeast Asia and, well, that whole region of the world, basically everywhere in the world that is not the United States, particularly China. But yeah, that's one thing we can do. The other thing that you can do that would greatly contribute is seriously consider electric vehicles, and seriously consider advocating for electrical power generation that does not rely on carbon-producing processes. I don't want to go too much into that one because that's another Save the World topic that I'd like to do later. How do we fix energy production? But those few things can help. We were actually looking at getting a new car because we need one. And there are just more and more. You see all these electric and hybrid electric vehicles coming on market. The ones that are particularly attractive to me personally are the ones that go all electric for a short range and then have an auxiliary gas tank that allows you to use gasoline for extended range trips. A few examples include the Chevy Volt, the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid, and some others. Teslas, which are well beyond what I can afford, are very nice, not just because they're nice cars, but because they are actually extended range, wholly electric vehicles. As more and more of those comes to market, that will help reduce greenhouse gas emissions here. But one of the great struggles now that we should definitely discuss as laymen who know everything are, what do you do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions for people or in sectors of the world where those technologies just aren't as affordable as the ones that do produce those emissions? So if you went over to China with its bazillion people or India with its bazillion people and said everybody has to buy electric cars from now on, given that those vehicles cost significantly more than the average vehicle over there, what do you do? How do you make that sustainable and workable for large populations where those new technologies just aren't as affordable yet? It is an interesting question, and we can discuss it or not.
Seems that we're moving away from being solution-based people here, Matt. We're going for, silver bullet solutions.
Oh, I apologize. I misunderstood. So the actual silver bullet solution is to set up a large federal foreign aid program where the United States will pay for and export electric vehicles to those large populations in China, India, Africa, Asia, and all the rest of Europe, because America.
Yes.
So do we want to move on and talk about the national debt right now, or do we want to discuss?
Coming soon. Okay. All right. So Matt has raised some possibilities and some other issues. Let's hear Cameron's take on it.
So how we can stop the emission of greenhouse gases. So I think first thing is we can all try to flatulate less would be one that can help.
Is this a question of self-control then? Not like diet change, but literally just
of Taco Bell.
Oh, boy.
It seems perfectly reasonable, right? If we produce the large amounts of methane, that can help, right? I like kind of what Matt's going with the electric idea. I think it's a very efficient way that we can do produce a lot less. On the flip side of that, when we start messing with batteries and stuff, we're actually starting to work with a lot more, dangerous chemicals that are heavy metals, they'll pollute the earth as well. So,
that
you
sounds like a save the world topic for a follow on. Hey, we're stuck on greenhouse gas emissions. We'll deal with it.
We got issues no matter where we go,
Yeah, we'll deal with the water table next week.
we do the solar panels, we're killing birds and warming the areas. If we do that, if we do wind, we're also killing birds because obviously birds fly in migratory paths where the wind goes. And when you throw windmills up there, they slaughter, tens of thousands of birds every year.
The problem isn't that the birds are being killed. It's that they're not being used as a resource.
You kill the birds, they start to decay, and then they release more greenhouse gases.
Well, that's true. What I'm thinking is that if you build just a giant barbecue pit underneath the wind farms, this seems like a no-brainer.
So, I I don't know. I'm a big fan of hybrid things, and we have a hybrid car, and I'm always really excited when I get 40 miles per hour to the, 40 miles to the gallon, which is really nice. Also, just to you California guys out there, right now gas is $1.95.
I hate you so much.
just throwing that out there, just to kind of rub it in right now here in Utah. I don't know. I read a book once written by a crazy lunatic conservative whose last name was Beck.
Are there other types of conservatives?
I've heard this guy.
And he actually said, I believe he actually got real statistics that 70% of the methane gases caused in greenhouse that we're worried about is actually caused by cows. And
that's correct. I can verify. I have done reading on this as well. I'll discuss this in my go at this here soon.
Okay. So I'm just saying the flatulating cows is really our problem. So we just need to stop flatulating so much. Kind of going back to my original thought.
All right. This is very much at the layman level. This is perfect. Okay.
Black beans is always at the layman level.
Okay, Tim, can you try to enlighten us, please?
Carl, I thought that, with those little subtle barbs that you put out, I was thinking, if I'm just silent, then people will feel pity for me. But,
No, they won't. I will stop them from doing so.
That's right. Each one. Okay. Here we go. So I appreciate the ideas that Matt and Cameron have brought up. I'll add a new wrinkle here. One of the problems that we encounter is that the discussion about greenhouse gas and, say, the environment and all that stuff often centers on the wrong areas for any real change to happen because it doesn't focus on the problem. So for example, and I think that like what Matt was saying about improved technology helping to reduce greenhouse emissions, that's valuable and that's important. However, unfortunately, in the past, improved technology has not resulted in decrease in greenhouse, in carbon footprint, but rather just an increase in our standard of living and our convenience and so forth. What I think will happen with improved technologies is that will just free us up to do more.
Are you currently in a windmill?
I'll just hold perfectly still. All right. So anyway, the problem we have, really, we have to look at the source. Our greenhouse gas emissions are a result of our consuming everything I do throughout my day that consumes and has a carbon footprint is part of the, for example, and our discussion focuses on these kind of false palliatives. Recycling, unfortunately, has become that.
That is not a lay word.
Recycling.
We need a sound effect for this. You need to be like wearing the dunce cap and muted for multiple minutes.
That's right. Sit in the penalty box. Okay, let me try again. Our discussion, unfortunately, sometimes centers on solution things that appear to be solutions, totally ignore the problem. For example, recycling. It's a great thing. It's an important thing. But what happens is a lot of people, they use recycling as an excuse to write off all of their consumption. So I'm going to consume all of these, high carbon footprint goods, but I'm recycling, so it's okay. And we're not addressing the problem. The real problem is just our mammoth consumption in Western society. And Matt, you brought up also the fact that, other countries who aren't considered fully industrialized countries, but are approaching that are now adopting a lot of the habits that industrialized countries have, which are, emit huge amounts of greenhouse gases. Eating meat, for example, and talking about all those cows. Well, not only are the methane emissions from the cows, but all of the agricultural production necessary to sustain those animals. That's why eating meat is a high greenhouse gas emission activity. So what's going to happen is everyone's going to continue living the way they always have because they're comfortable with it, and our comfort is of more value to us than some abstract improvement of the environment by a minuscule amount by us, you know, reducing our greenhouse gas emitting activities.
So it's kind of the trap of, why should I change and go vegetarian? Everyone else is going to continue eating their delicious sirloin and porterhouse steaks all around me, and I'm going to get cancer when the ozone layer dies anyway. Why should I deprive myself of this juicy steak in the interim?
And people aren't even getting to that point because they're distracted. Going green is hip, but businesses will plaster some, you know, green seal on their product, something that doesn't actually result in reduced consumption. People will buy it or use it feeling good that they're doing something good for the environment and ignoring the fact that their highly consumptive lifestyle is what is causing the problem. I'll give one more example. I listened to a TED Talk, a lady who was running a clothing business, and they were wanted to be eco-friendly and stuff. So they were using, you know, environmentally friendly, you know, sourced products or whatever. But she stepped back and she realized, my business model is still me needing people to buy more stuff and consume more stuff in order for me to be successful, which is true of pretty much any traditional business model. So she stepped back and she said, all right, I'm going to start a new business. And so now she does, it's a clothes sharing business where people will you rent clothes long term and share them around, and kind of found a new model that requires a whole lot less consumption, but still has something of value. And so I think what's going to happen, that kind of thing is anomalous. It's unusual. The current, you know, people who are alive, we're going to kind of die, and the younger generation is going to grow up more.
When you say when we're going to kind of die, there's a zombie ending here. I'm sensing it.
I'm voting for one of those that don't die. Just throwing that out there.
So did we just go to greenhouse gas emissions are going to cause the zombie apocalypse? Because if that's the case, I'm in. Let's do this thing.
Things like this, changes like this are so hard to affect, because what would really need to happen to really solve the greenhouse gas problem is for people to have a substantial shift in their mindset, in their lifestyle. And that is awfully hard to accomplish across the board in a society, let alone in multiple societies across the world. What will happen is younger generations growing up will be more attuned to this, more aware of it, and frankly, they'll be more in trouble with it as problems from, you know, climate change continue to develop, and they will have more skin in the game to make these changes and hopefully, adopt lifestyles that require less greenhouse gas. In the meantime, hopefully technology progress will help to make that easier to do.
Well, and you brought up a scary point. When you talk about how there's so many false solutions and you talk about the rising generation being more aware of it, I guess the great danger there would be the rising generation being aware of the wrong things and fixing the wrong stuff. It's okay if I eat all these burritos that are going to cause me all this flatulence because they come in recyclable packaging, right?
And you're right, because and the marketing
beef burritos
complex and sophisticated, that, you know, there's a lot of messaging going out there and lots of businesses that stand to benefit from the appearance of eco-friendly without actually having to do any of the heavy lifting to actually be eco-friendly. And of course, the underlying concept being the real way for them to be eco-friendly would be to actually have discouraged consumption of their products, which of course is a failing business model if I ever heard of one.
Well, there are some specifics kind of that we've sort of touched on. I don't know that, I mean, there are many products that are higher emission footprint than others, beef and stuff being near the top, according to Glenn Beck, who, as we know, is always a reliable source on everything. And if anyone's listening
as well,
yeah, I really should put up like a little sarcasm icon when I'm talking or something.
I like the Blaze Network.
There we go. But yeah, I mean, it seems like there are specific areas that we could target to reduce consumption that actually would make a difference without reducing, you know, everything. But, you know, cutting down on beef and demand for beef, cutting down on demand for petroleum products, and even cutting down on demand for electricity, not just clean electricity, but, you know, quote, clean electricity, haha. But any electricity or energy, it seems like those types of things would be areas to focus on.
Yeah. All right, Tim, I'm going to cut you off because it's my turn.
I have a quick question. Is this topic point sparked by the Green Initiative Bill that's been...
We do not have a Democratic sponsorship either, I believe. That's still in the works.
Well, and I think we lost the Tea Party, too, so...
I think we've roundly offended all political parties, which is kind of the goal. So
mission
let's continue.
Accomplished.
Yeah. Okay.
But they don't count.
Yeah.
Can we talk about libertarians at some point?
Hold on. they're hard to offend. They're very happy with everyone. All right, so it's my turn to take a whack at this, and I've got real solutions. None of this... hardcore, you know, you need to change your lifestyle garbage.
Hey, not flatulating as much is an easy lifestyle change.
No, I like very, this. Very painful. I can be comfortable with a solution where I don't have to work or make a change.
That's right. Here we go. Okay. So first of all, we've got, so this whole cow gas issue, cows producing methane, legit, recently brought up in a whole bunch of different scenarios. But if you read the Bill and Melinda Gates letter that they put out every year, they recently talked about that, where they cows do produce some huge amount of methane, which is a huge greenhouse gas. However, there is already a solution for this in the works, and that is seaweed, as it turns out. So read up on seaweed. If you feed seaweed, if you mix a little bit of seaweed in the food being fed to the cows, the methane gets cut anywhere from 50% to 95%. And
what?
So, oh yes, it's legit. Well, so at this point, the only question left to answer is how do we produce enough seaweed to mix it in all of the cows' food? So
we're going to need a lot of synthetic petroleum-based fertilizers.
Does this also work for humans, consuming a little bit more seaweed?
Potentially. I can't make any promises.
All right.
After, you know, a cow fed on seaweed, you're eating your steak and it tastes like sushi.
You get there a you go. Turk. Lots of upsides here. So
that's the most anti-American thing I've ever heard.
it's sashimi. Sashimi. Where's Connor? He'll tell us how.
Sashimi?
Yes, sashimi.
Okay. All right, so that is the solution for cow gas, is literally help the growing of seaweed, all right? So aid in the growing of seaweed, and then feed it to your cow. Which
are you going to talk about our podcast souvenir and merchandise shop where we have our seaweed endorsing shirts for sale?
That would be will be our first item up for sale.
Excellent. $500 a piece, and all proceeds go to raising your awareness of seaweed.
Seaweed. We'll start our own non-for-profit seaweed fund. Yeah. Okay.
Delete the non in there.
Well, we'll edit out certain parts of this. Okay. The other one. Okay. So this one is slightly more work on your side, but it also this also is self-serving because you really have to go at the self-serving components in order to make change, and that is run the last mile. So a huge percent of the gas that we burn when we drive is when we are trying to find parking or driving inner city. And so if you literally just find something within a mile of where you work or wherever you're going on a day-to-day basis, you park there instead of going and trying to work through the last 5 or 10 stoplights and then spinning around for a minute or two trying to find a parking spot. You park a little bit further away, you jog in, you walk in, whatever you have time for, and that will save something like 20 to 25% of your gas over the course of quite a while. Of a year, let's say.
dies.
So we should just build giant parking lots just outside the city and then we run in. Is this what I'm hearing?
That's hey, we're on the right track here.
Okay.
So, and then put a like a kelp farm on the roof of the parking garage.
There so
I'll throw out another one that can reduce transportation emissions. You know, you look at the different ways that we have of transporting a thing from here to there. One of the cleanest methods that humankind has come up with is actually the heavy lift space launch vehicle, which uses liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. And when those two react, they produce a whole lot of force and water. So the other thing that you can do, it requires the purchase of a modification kit. But if you outfit your vehicle with that form of propulsive device, you cut your greenhouse gas emissions down to zero. And plus you're providing you irrigation die? In all of those, you know, urban areas where you're driving around.
And
I do believe there are some hydrogen cars out in the works.
Oh, yeah, but those are hydrogen cells and those are lame.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, so Matt has now proposed that we use rocket fuel. So yep. Good. Okay. All right. So I'm going to hit two more topics, and then we're going to move on to our second question. So of course I'm surprised we haven't talked about nuclear energy. Nuclear energy being how France is powered. There are downsides to this whole radioactive nonsense. It didn't cause any problem for Spider-Man, so I don't know why we're so afraid of it.
I think we should do an entire podcast on nuclear energy.
Okay. In reality, though, I do think that we could probably algorithmically figure out where we can dump this stuff so that it affects the fewest number of people. But that's a real solution.
Nevada,
I think an algorithm, an open source algorithm that everyone can check and just figure out that it's fair, that determines where we can dump our nuclear waste in order to affect the fewest people makes sense.
I vote Nebraska. And that Iowa, because
it wouldn't be a no. That's the whole.
They
point.
Use those areas for cows, and as we all know, cows are the single greatest threat to humanity. So when we take out the cows, we're gonna have lots of room to put the, the various radioactive actinides and other things that can. I like this plan.
We might be able to grow the seaweed faster with the nuclear material.
Well, okay. If we start dumping the waste there now, it will kill the cows, which will further reduce emissions.
Don't have enough cows. We're getting Chick-fil-A as a sponsor as well. Okay. CO2. Okay, so this is the real silver bullet, though, right here. And this is what is CO2 harvesting. All right. So obviously greenhouse emissions include methane, but we've already come up with the seaweed solution there. The real solution is, and there are ongoing studies for this. This is a active area of research. People are looking into how to essentially use CO2 as fuel for the different things that we need in our lives. So instead of
paintball guns,
not paintball guns. So essentially, take CO2, which is the problem right now, and use it again. And there is research that has demonstrated that this is possible. So essentially, we need a huge CO2 harvesting program that can, instead of having to worry about reducing greenhouse emissions, literally make greenhouse emissions not a problem by using greenhouse gases in order to fuel our energy needs.
So we need to make a giant air purifier that sucks up CO2 and captures it so we can repurpose it, is what you're saying.
Isn't that called a tree?
Hey, okay.
And it converts CO2 into wood, which is a fuel.
And oxygen.
Hey, so clearly it can be done, as demonstrated by all the plants. And they don't even have brains, is what I'm saying, all right? So if they can figure it out, so can we. But in reality, there are membranes that I've read one of the research papers. They've got this oxygen selecting membrane that can pull oxygen out of CO2, and obviously we can use oxygen quite well. So it's a thing. Look into it.
Here's my challenge. Is there a product that has a negative carbon footprint, because that membrane would need to be produced and, installed and cleaned and so forth. So we would have to, for this to work, and it would be cool if it did, but we would have to have something that actually, used less carbon to implement than it or would remove more carbon than it took to put it out there.
Sure.
Which sounds kind of like, you know, like a, you know, the perpetual motion machine, like, you know.
I don't know if it's exactly the same. I don't think it's defying a law of physics. So, I mean, we're not exactly, we're just reorganizing molecules, not destroying energy, if you will.
Well, the other part there is the market forces. You have to make your CO2 cleaner, recycler, repurposer more economically viable than synthesizing new CO2 from scratch, which we do. And yeah, you have to make it more attractive in terms of dollars to pull the CO2 out of the atmosphere and repurpose it than to go out and buy a CO2 tank.
Sure. Well, and the market forces would be brought to bear and things would get sorted out as they always are, of course. So
well, maybe you can promise everyone a free steak dinner if they use repurposed CO2.
Okay. On that note, we're going to move on to the next topic because we've clearly solved that one, and we are going to more quickly with a little more, a little less, shall we say, flatulence deal
persiflage. The word is persiflage.
Deal with the national debt. How are we going to deal with the national debt? We each get 2 minutes. Okay. Cameron, let's hear from Tim first, actually. Go ahead, Tim.
All right, so national debt. I think, honestly, we're just going to have to kind of live with it because I think we've seen from multiple presidencies of both parties that the only way to decrease the national debt is for the economy to go really well, which in my mind, the government has very little control over. And the only thing it can do is make things worse. So maybe I would suggest that the government do moderate cuts across the board, everything from entitlement, military spending, and even other things like, you know, popular things like infrastructure.
Education?
Huh?
Education?
Yeah. On a national level, yes.
There go the last few listeners to our podcast.
Tim has now literally offended everyone. Thank you, Tim.
Now, note I said moderate, you know, not like crazy austerity measures, but you have to start somewhere, and it's a big ship to turn around. Since I think government action is quite inefficient in a lot of areas anyways, you would have less inefficiency if you just had less government activity. So I'm revealing my kind of lost the word. It's the one party that stands with us still.
Libertarian.
There we go. My libertarian leanings on that. But
and you couldn't even remember their name. And there they go.
You've now offended them. There they go. You've lost them too, Tim.
But the thing is, it would have to be done in moderation because someone comes in with a hatchet and starts swinging, and it causes all sorts of, you know, shock and fluctuations that affect the economy and the public in negative ways. And, you know, we've seen things like that happening and real problems in, like, you know, Southern Europe, for example, where they've enacted, you know, hardcore austerity measures. You know, if you can come in and kind of do it in moderation, and over the course of, say, a few decades, but see, that would have to have public support. And yeah, anyways, so we're hosed. That's my bottom line. There you go.
Wow. All
Thank
right.
Wow. If we're just hosed, what's the point of even messing around with seaweed calves?
I will now move on to Cameron. Go ahead.
Okay. I think we just need to, one, I think if we go with a nice flat tax for everyone of 40%, no 40. One gets rich.
I think 40%. The only remaining listener is now that socialist senator from New York.
Oh my gosh. 40% flat tax. I like this. Continue.
40% flat tax on everyone. No one gets any money back from the government. It just all stays there. The second thing we do is all government officials don't get paid anything above the lowest state minimum wage. Because they're supposed to be serving us. So why are they getting paid, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to be a government official?
All right. Well, you just offended Congress, which is a good way to bring back listeners. So let's continue. Continue that.
If I may ask, does a sergeant in the United States Army count as a government official?
No.
Well, I mean, like our senators and congressmen.
Okay.
The people that actually enact laws and then screw up the laws that we actually voted for, you know.
Okay. I'm all people. In favor of paying the minimum wage.
They get paid minimum wage because they're supposed to be, you know, at the service of their state, you know, for our country. Why are they getting paid ridiculous amounts of money? And also, then if they receive large sums of money from corporations, other people like that, so they're lobbying for them, it's noticeable. And then we cap it at a 2-term max that you can serve.
All right.
So we don't get crazy people in office making things worse. We are actually paying money into the system to help it go down. I know that seems like a ridiculously high thing, but on the flip side, I vaguely remember from my econ professor that even though our national debt is ridiculously high, it's kind of following the rate of inflation, if I remember right, what he was telling us.
Okay.
So.
Good points. All right. Matt, you haven't gone yet, right? Okay, your turn.
Oh, I have. Okay. So there's a couple parts to our national debt and different expenditures that we take on as a country are paid for with different funds. It's important to remember that. So things like Social Security are funded differently than the Department of Defense. Things like all of the pensions for all of the people who have retired, the entitlement benefits are funded differently than a lot of our other national expenditures. So it's important to keep those types of things in mind when we look at reducing expenses, because some of them are just paid for differently with somewhat self-sustaining funds. That said, a large chunk of our national expenditures every year goes to interest on our debt. So the first thing that we can do is just flat out default on all of this stuff. We're not paying interest anymore. What are you going to do about it? We got the biggest military. Whoop. The other thing that we can do at a somewhat more serious level.
I'd hope so.
Well, you know.
You just proposed war with the world.
No.
China.
Maybe. No. The other types of things that we can do, and we're actually starting to do this, a large amount of our annual expenditure does go to pensions and retirement benefits. The government has actually started looking at ways to reduce that. For example, servicemen in the military, if they make it to 20 years, they get a 50% pension, which is a pretty sweet deal. Now, granted, that's 20 years of going through things that are just not fun to go through. And so, in my opinion, they totally earned it. But the government is actually moving to a new model where the pension is reduced to 40%. But they will start, they've started up a matching program with a IRA style system. So instead of your pension, they've set up an IRA to go along with it. The serviceman gets a good retirement benefit out of it, but it costs less long term for the government, which is kind of a nice way to do it. Military spending does come up a lot because we spend a silly amount of money on the military. Having worked in that sector, I start to understand where that money goes and why we spend the things that we spend it on. I'm not in favor of reducing it that much, nor am I in favor of reducing expenditure on education, Tim. Thank you. But one of the things that I do think we can do is pursue efforts that make things cost less. Every day, the DOD buys enough fuel to drive a car around the earth like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. The DOD uses a lot of fuel. If we pursue energy sources and fuels that are higher efficiency or that are just totally different, that could vastly reduce energy expenditures. And again, they've moved on that sort of thing. Government vehicles on military bases are increasingly all electric, just to try to save that that expenditure. But additional technologies that reduce transportation costs, that reduce fabrication costs, that reduce the cost to move a thing from one point to another, or to communicate, or to act, any of those types of things are ways that can reduce federal expenditures and hopefully thereby reduce the national debt. The pitfall is the way that budgets are set up right now. If you have a government acquisition program and you don't spend all of the money because you found some cost savings thing, the way that they do this right now is they take away the money that you didn't spend and they cut your budget for next year because you obviously didn't need all of that money and you therefore obviously won't need all the money that you say you will next year. And so managers of acquisition programs are incentivized to spend all of their money. In fact, they spend it, they get it obligated and spent right up front so that if anything, they can ask for more money in order to make sure that their program survives and isn't canceled. Underexpending and saving money, weirdly enough, is a good way to get your program cut and or canceled because of the way that we've tried to set it up and save money, and we've gone about this totally the wrong way. So this isn't necessarily the fault of the managers. This is the way that the laws are written to incentivize people to get that money spent, and it's totally backwards. So reform in the way that the federal and state governments acquire things would be, I think that would go a long way to reducing a lot of our expenditures.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm raving for a while there.
Lots of good specifics, and I, once again, though, will be coming with the silver bullet solution. All right? So, here it comes. All right, so first of all, and this legitimately, I think, is this we need to pass a constitutional amendment that there cannot be a budget deficit at the national level. And then we need to give ourselves a time frame to cool down, because right now that would cause a problem with the economy, I believe. So we don't want to do that. So we give ourselves like 5 years to wean ourselves off a national deficit. And then the constitutional amendment would then apply that from then on out, with the exception of, I imagine, wartime. Which both houses of Congress and the president would all have to, two-thirds or three-quarters ratify, that we could then go back for a 2 year period, run a budget deficit in order to fund wartime efforts or whatever. Besides that, it needs to be a constitutional amendment. We cannot allow Congress the power to run our nation into the ground, because they have clearly demonstrated that they are not up to that. So
how do you get Congress to propose and pass that sort of amendment, given that it's all Congress's fault?
Details.
No, I like this silver bullet.
Yeah, so I think a constitutional amendment, I think it comes down to, and then, so the way to do what you just ask is the second part of my solution, and that's transparency. So, and by transparency, I literally mean what you expect when you go to any of your large corporations that you buy stuff from. You can literally, get on and just track all kinds of public information about the company, right? Who makes what? Depending on the company, you can track all kinds of stuff, because it's required that. And it's required by the market that they give you transparency. I mean, in the world that we live in, the information world, that's what we demand. But we do not demand it of our government to a large extent, because we have come to expect that they can't give it to us. So it has to become a demand that transparency is entirely a requirement. So that means all bills, all that they pass in Congress, should be made available to the public before they're passed. They all have to be written in plain English and have to be capped at a certain number of pages. We have to allow us to see where our tax dollars are going specifically. Like when you pay your taxes, you can click and you can see this is where each percent of your dollar is going. And then you can drill down on that and say, hey, what the heck is, why is 50% of my dollar going to Medicare? And then you can figure out that that's a problem. So if there's more transparency and just literally connecting the dots, we'd have a significantly more informed public that would then, I believe, hold their congressmen and congresswomen more to account. So between that and the constitutional amendment, I think we would have a long-term solution that would reduce the national debt and eventually pay it off.
The other thing we can do is the old Viking method where we simply pillage Europe.
I thought that would come up for sure. So, okay, we're going to give 1 minute each for our final topic because this one's incredibly important. How do you silence and combat the Twitter mob? 1 minute each. I will go first because I've gone last on the other ones. Okay, so the first thing we need to do is cut off everyone from their social media accounts for about 2 weeks, all right? So that there's mass hysteria and panic until everyone figures out that it actually didn't really accomplish anything to begin with. And then they will realize that there is life beyond Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. And it'll get people to talk. And so I think we need to cut people off from their social media for an extended amount of time in order to check people. And then I think we need to enact some type of martial law against Twitter mobs going forward. If you find someone that has Twitter offended you, you can literally track them down and cause them strange types of pain.
I'm not totally comfortable with this. Okay.
Wow. All right.
Accountability. Yeah. All right. Accountability.
And we just lost Twitter as a sponsor, and we now have
they don't have any
probably
money anyway.
Five or six angry tweets directed at Carl, just at least.
Throwing this also out, some people might consider our podcast as a social media outlet.
Yeah. And we just lost everyone else. Good job, Carl.
Ours is clearly far more, you know, dialogue-based. We're not the angry Twitter mob. We are reasonable, except with my last suggestion about hurting people, which, of course, is not truly how I feel.
All right, Cameron, what do you got?
I was just going to say we should just burn effigies of everyone that just annoys us. So, you know, you just throw that up, film.
Ramping up the Twitter mob? Then you're going to post the burning of the effigy on Twitter?
Well, I'm wondering if this is just like a catharsis where you just see the little thing burn and you're like, oh, that feels good. Or if you're actually talking, let's get some voodoo enchantments here, and you're doing it as a, you know, trying to invoke malicious dark forces.
I'm more kind of thinking like Guy Fawkes-ish burning effigy, you know, just people just get together, burn an effigy, and then they're good. You know, they're happy. They cheer that they got the traitor. Or you know, you're destroying the crazy person on the internet.
Okay.
Not actually physically hurting them, just, you know.
So effigy-based catharsis. I burned a thing, I feel better about myself.
It's like when you do your fingers in front of your eye, you just squish the person that's annoying you. You know, never done that?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
You know, same kind of thing. You know, just like squish their head between it, you know.
This is the way to combat the Twitter mob. All right. I like it. Matt, your turn.
So the way to fight mobs is with mobs. if we've learned anything from consulting with the Corleone family, the way to beat any mob is to ally with or form a more powerful mob. So my suggestion would be to get Facebook involved and use that to counter the Twitter mob. I don't know what that means, but Twitter. I'm pretty sure it will work.
Okay, so Facebook mob beats Twitter mob.
That's right.
But okay. They're owned by the same company.
Well, fine. Then you get a bunch of lesser mobs.
Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram. Is Foursquare still a thing? If you can get them to go together. So. No? Okay. Well,
MySpace. We'll form a MySpace mob.
Oh, goodness. Boy. You know what? At that point, I'm okay with the Twitter mob running the show. Just pay your protection and you'll be fine.
Okay, so we have real good solutions for the Twitter mob. And that is where we're going to leave it. Despite what our sponsors would have us believe. This was a very successful episode, and we will solve more problems in the future.
Hey, how much money does the seaweed industry make a year? And can we get some of that sweet dollar?
Oh, it's going to be making a lot soon.
Or at least discounts at sushi restaurants.